You mean Mayor? Obviously. Mayor and his brother. His affection for one plays nicely off his hatred for the other. It might be our only way to keep him around. I say let him go. Let him roll up a few more silvers and be another thorn in Maven's side. We don't need him here. She almost laughs, a bitter sound nowadays. Yes, I'll just tell Command that we kicked out our most well-known and legitimate operative. That will go over very well. He's not even really with us. Well, Mayor's not really with Maven, but people don't seem to understand that either, do they? Even though she's right, I have to scowl. As long as we have Cal, people take notice. No matter how badly we botched that first attempt at Archeon, we still ended up with a silver prince on our side. A bleeding, useless prince. Annoying, frustrating, a veritable pain in the ass. But not useless. Oh, yeah? What's he done for us lately besides get Nanny killed? Nanny wasn't forced to go to Archeon, Cameron. She made a choice, and she died. That's how it works sometimes. Nurturing as she sounds, Farley isn't much older than me. 22, maybe, at most. I think her maternal instincts are kicking in early. Besides the fact that he wins us points with less hostile silvers, Montfort has an interest in him. Montfort. The mysterious Free Republic. The twins, Rash and Tahir, paint the place as a haven of liberty and equality. Where Reds, Silvers, and Ardents, what they call New Bloods, live in peace together. An impossible place to believe in. But even so, I have to believe in their money, their supplies, their support. Most of our resources come from them in some way. What do they want? I swirl the tea in my cup, letting the heat wash over my face. It's not as cold here as in Irabel, but winter still creeps through the Rakasta safe house. A poster boy? Something like that. There's been lots of chatter with Command. I don't have clearance for most of it. They wanted Mare, but she's a bit preoccupied. Mention of Mayor Barrow doesn't affect Farley as much as the memory of Shade, but a flicker of pain washes over her face anyway. She tries to hide it, of course. Farley does her best to appear impenetrable, and usually she is. So there's really no chance of rescuing her, I whisper. When she shakes her head, I feel a surprising pang of sadness in my own chest. Infuriating as Mare might be, I still want her back. We need her. And over the long months, I've realized I need her too. She knows what it is to be different and in search of someone like you, to fear and be feared in the same measure, even if she was a condescending twit most of the time. Farley stops pacing to pour herself another cup of tea. It steams, filling the room with a hot herbal scent. She takes it in hand, but doesn't drink, crossing instead to the foggy window set high in her wall. It bleeds daylight. I don't see how we can with what we have. Infiltration of Corvium is easy compared to Archeon. It would take a full-scale assault, the kind we can't muster, especially now after Nanny and an assassination attempt. Security at Maven's court will be at its highest, worse than a prison, unless... unless? Cal tells us to wait, to let the Silvers in Corvium turn on each other, to let Maven make his mistakes before we do anything else. And it will help Mare, too. Farley nods. The weak, divided court of a paranoid king will be easier for her to escape. She sighs, staring at her untouched tea. She's the only one who can save herself now. The conversation is easy to twist. As much as I want Mare back, I want someone else more. How many miles are we from the choke? This again. This always. I push back from the table to get up. I feel like I should be standing. I'm just as tall as Farley, but she always seems like she's looking down at me. I'm young, untrained. I don't know much about the world outside my slum. But that doesn't mean I'm going to sit here and follow orders. I'm not asking for your help or the guards. I just need a map and maybe a gun. I'll do the bleeding rest myself. She doesn't blink. Cameron, your brother is embedded in a legion. It's not like pulling out a tooth. My fist clenches at my side. You think I came all the way here to sit around and watch Cal spin his wheels? It's an old argument by now. She easily shuts me down. Well, I certainly don't think you came all the way here to get killed. She replies calmly. Her broad shoulders rise just a little in challenge, which is precisely what will happen, no matter how strong or deadly your ability is. And even if you take a dozen silvers with you, I'm not going to let you die for nothing. Is that clear? My brother is not nothing, I grumble. She's right, but I don't want to admit it. Instead, I avoid her eyes and turn to the wall. My fingers pick at the peeling paint, ripping away pieces in annoyance. A childish thing, but it makes me feel a bit better. You're not my captain. You don't get to tell me what to do with my life. That's true. I'm just a friend who feels inclined to point something out. I hear her shift, her footsteps heavy on the creaking floor. But her touch is light, a brush of her hand on my shoulder. She's robotic in the movement, not really knowing how to comfort another person. Bleakly, I wonder how she and warm-smiling Shade Barrow ever shared a conversation, let alone a bed. I remember what you told Mayor when we first found you. On the jet, you said that her search for new bloods to save them was wrong. A continuation of the blood divide, favoring one kind of red over another. And you were right. This is not the same. I just want to save my brother. How do you think the rest of us got here? She scoffs. To save a friend, a sibling, a parent, to save ourselves. We all came here for selfish reasons, Cameron, but we can't be distracted by them. We have to think of the cause, the greater good, and you can do so much more here with us. We can't lose you. We can't lose you, too. The last word hangs in the air, unspoken. I hear it anyway. You're wrong. I didn't come here by choice. I was taken. Mare Barrow forced me to follow, and you all went along with it. Cameron, that's a card you have played too many times. You chose to stay a long time ago. You chose to help. And what would you choose now, Farley? I glare at her. She may be my friend, but that doesn't mean I have to back down. Excuse me? Would you choose the greater good, or would you choose Shade? When she doesn't respond, her eyes sliding out of focus, I have my answer. I realize I don't want to see her cry and turn my back, making for the door. I have to train. I say to no one. I doubt she's still listening. Training is harder in the Rocasta safe house. We don't have anywhere near enough space, not to mention most of the operatives I know were left in Irabel. Killorn, for example, eager as he is, he's nowhere near ready for all-out battle, and he doesn't have an ability to lean on. He was left behind, but my trainer was not. After all, she's Silver, and the colonel wasn't about to let her out of his sight. Sarah Skonos waits in the basement of our reinforced warehouse, in a room dedicated to new blood exercises. It's dinner time, so the other new bloods in this particular sanctuary are upstairs eating with the rest. We have the space to ourselves. Not that we need much space at all. She sits cross-legged, palms flat on a concrete floor that matches the concrete walls. Her notepad is there, too, ready to be used if need be. Her eyes track my entrance, the only greeting I'll get. As of yet, we have not found another skin healer to join us, and she remains mute. Even though I'm used to it, the sight of her sunken cheeks and missing tongue makes me cringe. As usual, she pretends not to notice and gestures to the space in front of her. I sit as she instructs and fight the familiar urge to run or attack. She's Silver. She's everything I've been raised to fear, hate, and obey. But I can't find it in myself to despise Sarah Skonos the way I do Julian or Cal. It's not that I pity her. I think I understand her. I understand the frustration of knowing what is right and being ignored or punished because of it. I can't count how many times I received half rations for looking at a Silver overseer incorrectly, for talking out of turn. She did the same, except her words were against a reigning queen, and so her words were taken away forever. Even though she can't speak, Sarah has a way of communicating what she wants. She taps me on the knee, forcing me to meet her cloudy gray eyes. Then she dips her face and puts a hand over her heart. I follow the motions, knowing what she wants. I match her breathing, steady, deep breaths in even succession. A calming mechanism that helps drown out all the thoughts swirling around my head. It clears my mind, allowing me to feel what I usually ignore. My ability hums beneath my skin, constant as always, but now I let myself notice it, not to use it, but to acknowledge its existence. My silence is still new to me, and I have to get to know it like any other skill. After long minutes of breathing, she taps me again, making me look up. This time she points at herself. Sarah, I'm really not in the right mood, I start to tell her, but she draws one hand through the air in a chopping motion. Shut up. Plain as day. I mean it. I could hurt you. She scoffs deep in her throat, one of the only true vocalizations she can make. It almost sounds like laughter. Then she taps her lips, smirking darkly. She's been hurt far worse. Fine, I warned you. I sigh. I wiggle a little, settling deeper into my position. Then I furrow my brow, letting the ability swim around me, deepening, expanding, until it touches her, and silence descends. Her eyes widen when it hits, a twinge at first. At least I hope it's just a twinge. I'm only practicing, and I don't intend to pummel her into submission. I think of Mare, able to call up storms, while Cal can make infernos, but both find it difficult to have a simple conversation without exploding. Control takes more practice than brute force. My ability deepens, and she holds up one finger to denote the level of discomfort. I try to keep the silence in place, constant but steady. It's like holding back a tide, I don't know what it feels like to be silenced. The silent stone didn't work on me in Koros prison, but it stifled, drained, and slowly killed all the people around me. I can do the same. After about a minute, she puts up a second finger. Sarah? With her other hand, she gestures for me to continue. I remember our session yesterday. She was on the floor at 5, though I knew I could push harder. But incapacitating our only skin healer is neither smart nor something I want to do. A flush paints her cheeks, but the door to the basement swings open before she can hold up another finger. My concentration and my silence break, drawing a relieved gasp from her. Both of us whirl to face our disruptor. While she breaks into a rare smile, I scowl. Jacobs, I mutter in his direction, we're training in case you haven't noticed. One side of his mouth twitches, begging to pull into a sneer of his own, but Julian refrains. Like the rest of us, he looks better here in Rocasta. Supplies are easier to come by. Our clothes are higher quality, quilted and lined against the cold. The food is heartier, the rooms warmer. Julian's color has returned, and his gray-flecked hair looks glossier. He's silver. He was born to thrive.
Oh, how foolish of me. I thought you were down here sitting on cold concrete for the fun of it, he replies. Clearly no love lost between us.
Sarah glares at him, a weak reproach, but it softens him anyway.
My apologies, Cameron, he adds quickly. I just wanted to tell Sarah something.
Sarah quirks an eyebrow, a question. When I get up to go, she stops me and, with a dip of her head, asks Julian to continue. He always obeys where she is concerned.
There's been an exodus from court. Maven expelled dozens of nobles, mostly his father's old advisors and those who might still harbor loyalties to Cal. I didn't believe the intelligence report at first. I've never seen anything like it before.
Julian and Sarah hold each other's gaze, both pondering what this means.
I don't care at all about a few silver lords and ladies, old friends of Julian and Sarah's.
And Mayor? I wonder aloud.
She's still there, still a prisoner. And any further fractures we may have expected from the rebelling houses.
He sighs, shaking his head.
Maven is already at war, and now he prepares for a storm.
I shift on the floor, moving my weight into a more comfortable position. He's right. Cold concrete isn't pleasant.
Good thing I'm used to it.
We already knew rescuing her was impossible. What else does this do for us?
Well, it's good and it's bad. More enemies for Maven give us more opportunity to work beyond his reach. But he's closing ranks, retreating further into his enclave of protection. We'll never get to him personally.
Next to me, Sarah hums low in her throat. She can't say what we're all thinking, so I do. Or to Mayor. Julian nods with sobering eyes.
How is your training coming along?
He changes topics with whiplash speed, and I stutter out a reply.
As good as it can. We don't have many teachers here. Because you refuse to train with my nephew.
The others can, I say, not bothering to keep the bite from my voice.
But I can't promise I won't kill him, so it's better I don't tempt myself.
Sarah tisks, but Julian brushes her off with a wave of his hand.
It's fine, really. You may think I don't understand, that I can't understand your point of view. And you're right. but I'm certainly doing my best to try, Cameron.
He takes a daring step toward us, still cross-legged on the floor.
I don't like it one bit and scramble to my feet, letting my defensive instincts take over. If I'm going to be this close to Julian Jacobs, I want to be ready.
There's no need to be afraid of me, I promise you.
Silver promises mean nothing.
I don't have to snap. The words are harsh enough.
To my surprise, Julian smiles, but the expression is hollow, empty.
Oh, don't I know that?
He mutters, more to himself and Sarah.
Hold on to your anger. Sarah might not agree, but it will help you more than anything else if you can learn to harness it.
As much as I don't want advice from such a man, I can't help but tuck it away.
He trained Mayor. I'd be stupid to deny he can help my ability grow. And anger is something I have in spades.
Any other news? I ask.
Farley and the Colonel seem to be stalling, or your nephew is stalling them.
Yes, it seems he is.
Odd. Thought he was always up for a fight.
Julian offers that strange smile again.
Cal was raised to war the same way you were raised to machines. But you don't want to go back to the factory, do you?
An answer. Any answer sticks in my throat.
I was a slave. I was forced. It was all I knew.
Don't get smart with me, Julian.
Grinds out instead, searing between my clenched teeth.
He only shrugs.
I'm trying to understand your perspective.
Do a bit to understand his.
On another day, I might storm from the room, angry, defensive. Find solace in a broken fuse, a stripped wire.
I sit back down instead, taking my place next to Sarah.
Julian Jacobs will not send me scurrying away like a scolded child. I've dealt with overseers far worse than him.
I watched babies die without seeing the sun, without breathing fresh air. Slaves to your kind. Have you?
When you have, then you can lecture me on perspective, Lord Jacobs.
I turn from him. Let me know when the prince finally picks a side, and if he picks the right one.
Then I nod at Sarah.
Ready to go again?
12. Mayor. Months ago, when the Silvers fled the Hall of the Sun, frightened by a Scarlet Guard attack on their precious ball, it was a united act. We left together, as one, heading downriver in succession to regroup in the capital. This is not the same. Maven's dismissals come in packs. I'm not privy to them, but I notice as the numbers dwindle. A few older advisors missing. The Royal Treasurer, some generals, members of various councils, relieved of their posts, the rumors say. But I know better. They were close to Cal, close to his father. Maven is smart not to trust them, and ruthless in their removal. He doesn't kill them or make them disappear. He's not stupid enough to trigger another house war. But it's a decisive move, to say the least, sweeping away obstacles like pieces from a chessboard. The results are feasts that look like mouths of missing teeth. Gaps appear, more with every passing day. Most of those asked to leave are older, men and women with ancient allegiances, who remember more and trust their new king less. Some start to call it the Court of Children. Many lords and ladies are gone, sent away by the king, but their sons and daughters are left behind. A request. A warning, a threat. Hostages. Not even House Mirandus escapes his growing paranoia. only House Samos remains in their entirety, not one of them falling prey to his tempestuous dismissals. Those still here are devout in their loyalty, or at least they make it look like it. That's probably why he summons me more now, why I see so much of him. I'm the only one with loyalties he can trust, the only one he really knows. He reads reports over our breakfast, eyes skimming back and forth with blistering speed. It's useless to try to see what they are. He's careful to keep them to his side of the table, turned over when finished and well out of my reach. Instead of reading the reports, I have to read him. He doesn't bother to surround himself with silent stone, not here in his private dining room. Even the sentinels wait outside, posted at every door and on the other side of the tall windows. I see them, but they can't hear us, as is Maven's design. His uniform jacket is unbuttoned, his hair unkempt, and he doesn't put on his crown this early in the morning. I think this is his little sanctuary, a place where he can trick himself into feeling safe. He almost looks like the boy I imagined, a second prince, content with his place, unburdened by a crown that was never his. Over the rim of my water glass, I watch every tick and flash across his face. Narrowed eyes, a tightening jaw, bad news. The dark circles have returned, and while he eats enough for two people, tearing through the plates in front of us, he seems thinned by the days. I wonder if he has nightmares of the assassination attempt. Nightmares of his mother, dead by my hand. His father, dead by his action. His brother, in exile but a constant threat. Funny, Maven called himself Cal's shadow, but Cal is the shadow now, haunting every corner of Maven's fragile kingdom. There are reports of the exiled prince everywhere, so prevalent that even I hear about them. They place him in Harbor Bay, Delphi, Rocasta. There's even shaky intelligence hinting that he escaped across the border into the Lakelands. I honestly don't know which, if any, of these rumors are true. He could be in Montfort for all I know, gone to the safety of a faraway land. Even though this is Maven's palace, Maven's world, I see Cal in it. The immaculate uniforms, drilling soldiers, flaming candles, gilded walls of portraits and house colors. An empty salon reminds me of dance lessons. If I glance at Maven from the corner of my eye, I can pretend. They're half-brothers, after all. They share similar features. The dark hair, the elegant lines of a royal face. But Maven is paler, sharper, a skeleton in comparison, body and soul. He is hollowed out. You stare so much, I wonder if you can read reflections in my eyes. Maven suddenly muses aloud. He flips the page in front of him, hiding what it holds as he looks up. His attempt to startle me fails. Instead, I continue spreading an embarrassing amount of butter onto my toast. If only I could see something in them, I reply, meaning all things. You're an empty boy. He doesn't flinch. And you're useless. I roll my eyes and idly tap my manacles against the breakfast table. Metal and stone rap against wood, like knocking on a door. Our talks are so fun. If you prefer your room, he warns. Another empty threat he makes every day. We both know this is better than the alternative. At least now I can pretend I'm doing something of use, and he can pretend he isn't entirely alone in this cage he built for himself. For both of us. It's hard to sleep here, even with the manacles, which means I have a lot of time to think and plan. Julian's books are not only a comfort, but a tool. He's still teaching me, even though we're who knows how many miles apart. In his well-preserved texts, there are new lessons to be learned and utilized. The first, and most important, is divide and conquer. Maven's already done it to me. Now I must return the favor. Are you even trying to hunt for John? Maven is actually startled at my question. The first mention of the new blood who used the assassination attempt to escape. As far as I know, he hasn't been captured. Part of me is bitter. John escaped where I couldn't. But at the same time, I'm glad. John is a weapon I want far away from Maven Kalor. After a split-second recovery, Maven returns to eating. He shoves a piece of bacon in his mouth, throwing etiquette to the wind. You and I both know that's not a man who is easily found. But you are looking. He had knowledge of an attack on his king and did nothing, Maven states, matter of fact. That's tantamount to murder itself. For all we know, he conspired with Houses Ebral, Haven, and Laris, too. I doubt it. If he'd helped them, they would have succeeded. Pity. He dutifully ignores the jab, continuing to read and eat. I tip my head, letting my dark hair spill across one shoulder. The gray ends are spreading, leeching upward, despite my healer's best efforts. Even House Skonos cannot heal what is already dead. John saved my life. Blue eyes meet mine, holding firm. Seconds before the attack, he got my attention. He made me turn my head. Or else. I run a finger along my cheekbone, where the bullet only grazed my cheek, instead of leaving my skull a ruin. The wound healed, but not forgotten. I must have a part to play in whatever future he sees. Maven focuses on my face. Not my eyes, but the place where a bullet would have obliterated my skull. For some reason, you're a difficult person to let die. For him, for the pageantry, I force a small, bitter laugh. What's so funny? How many times have you tried to kill me?
Just the once.
And the sounder was what?
My fingers tremble at the memory. The pain of the device is still fresh in my mind.
Just part of a game?
Another report flutters in the sunlight, landing face down. He licks his fingers before raising the next. All business, all for show. The sounder wasn't designed to kill you, Mare. Just incapacitate you, if need be. A strange look crosses his face. Almost smug, but not exactly.
I didn't even make that thing. Clearly, you're not one for ideas.
Illara, then?
Actually, it was Cal.
Oh.
Before I can stop myself, I look down, away from him, needing a moment of my own. The sting of betrayal pricks at my insides, if only for a second. It's no use being angry now.
I can't believe he didn't tell you. Maven presses on. He's usually very proud of himself. A brilliant thing, too.
But I don't care for it. I had the device destroyed. His eyes are on my face, hungry for a reaction. I keep my expression from changing, despite the sudden skip in my heartbeat. The sounder is gone. Another small gift, another message from the ghost.
It can easily be rebuilt, though, if you decide to stop cooperating.
Cal was kind enough to leave the device plans behind when he ran off with your band of red rats.
Escaped, I mumble. Move on. Don't let him throw you off.
Feigning disinterest, I push the rest of my food around my plate. I do my best to look hurt, as Maven wants me to be, but not let myself feel it. I have to stick to the plan. Twist the conversation as I want to twist it.
You forced him away. Also, you could take his place and be exactly like him.
Like me, Maven forces a laugh to hide how annoyed he is.
You have no idea what he would have been like with the crown on his head.
I cross my arms, settling back in my chair. This is playing out exactly as I want it to.
I know he would have married Evangeline Samos, continued fighting a useless war, and kept ignoring a country full of angry, oppressed people.
Does that sound at all familiar?
He may be a snake in human form, but even Maven doesn't have a retort for that. He slaps down the report in front of him, too quickly.
It faces up just for a second before he turns it over. I glimpse only a few words. Corvium, casualties. Maven sees me see them, and he hisses out a sigh of annoyance.
As if that will help you, he says quietly,
You're not going anywhere, so why bother?
I suppose that's true. My life probably won't last much longer.
He tips his head. Concern furrows his brow, as I hope it will, as I need it to.
What makes you say that?
I glare up at the ceiling, studying the elaborate molding and the chandelier above us. It flickers with tiny electric bulbs. If only I could feel them.
You know, Evangeline won't let me live. Once she's queen, I'm done for.
My voice trembles, and I push all my fear into the words. I hope it works. He has to believe me.
It's what she's wanted since the day I fell into her life.
He blinks at me.
You don't think I'll protect you from her?
I don't think you can.
My fingers pick at my gown, not as beautiful as the ones made for court, but just as overwrought.
You and I both know how easy it is for a queen to be killed.
The air ripples with heat as he continues to stare, daring me to meet his gaze. My natural instinct is to glare back, but I lean away, refusing to look at him. It will only incense him further. Maven loves an audience. The moment stretches, and I feel bare before him, prey in the path of a predator. That's all I am here. Caged, restrained, leashed. All I have left is my voice, and the pieces of Maven I hope I know.
She won't touch you.
And what about the Lakelanders? I snap my head back up. Tears of anger spring to my eyes, born of frustration, not fear.
When they rip apart your already splintering kingdom, what happens when they win this endless war and burn your world to embers?
I scoff to myself, heaving a shuddering breath. The tears fall freely now. They must. I have to sell this with every inch of myself.
I guess then we'll end up in the bowl of bones together, executed side by side.
By the way he pales, the little color he has draining from his face, I know he's thought the same thing. It plagues him endlessly, a bleeding wound. So I twist the knife.
You are on the edge of civil war. Even I know that. What's the point in pretending there's a scenario where I make it out of this alive? Either Evangeline kills me or the war does.
I told you already I won't let that happen.
The snarl I throw his way doesn't need to be faked.
In what life can I trust anything out of your mouth ever again?
When he stands, the cold fear pooling in my stomach isn't fake either. As he rounds the table, crossing to me in lean, elegant strides, I lock every muscle, tensing up so I don't shake. But I quiver anyway. I brace myself for a blow as he takes my face in disturbingly soft hands, both thumbs tight under my jaw, inches away from digging into my jugular. His kiss burns worse than his brand. The sensation of his lips on mine is the worst kind of violation. But for him, for what I need, I keep my hands fisted in my lap. My nails dig into my flesh instead of his.
He needs to believe as his brother believed. He needs to choose me the way I tried to make Cal choose me before. Still, I can't find it in me to open my mouth, and my jaw remains locked shut.
He breaks the kiss first, and I hope he can't feel my skin crawl beneath his fingers. Instead, his eyes search mine, looking for the lie I keep well hidden. I lost every other person I ever loved.
And whose fault is that?
Somehow, he trembles worse than I do. He steps back, letting me go, and his fingers scratch at one another. I'm shocked because I recognize the action. I do it too. When the pain in my head is so horrible, I need another kind to draw me away. He stops when he notices me staring, clasping both hands to his sides as tightly as he can.
She broke a lot of my habits, he admits. Never broke that one. Some things always come back.
She.
Ilara. I see her handiwork right in front of me. The boy she shaped into a king through a torture she called love.
He sits back down, slowly. I keep staring, knowing it unsettles him. I put him off balance, and still I don't understand exactly why. Every other person I ever loved,
I don't know why I'm included in that statement, but I know it's the reason I'm still breathing.
Careful, I edged the conversation back to Cal.
Your brother is alive.
Unfortunately so.
And you don't love him?
He doesn't bother to look up, but his eyes waver on the next report, fixed on a single spot. Not because he's surprised or even sad. He looks more confused than anything. A little boy trying to solve a puzzle with too many missing pieces.
No,
he says finally, lying.
I don't believe you, I tell him. I even shake my head.
Because I remember them as they were. Brothers, friends, raised together against the rest of the world. Even Maven can't shut himself off from something like that. Even Alara can't break that kind of bond. No matter how many times Maven tried to kill Cal, he can't deny what they were once.
Believe what you want, Mare, he replies. As before, he puts on an air of disinterest, violently trying to convince me this means nothing to him.
I know for a fact that I don't love my brother.
Don't lie. I have siblings, too. It's a complicated thing, especially between me and my sister. She's always been more talented, better at everything, kinder, smarter. Everyone prefers her to me.
I mumble my old fears, spinning them into a web for Maven.
Take it from a person who knows. Losing one of them.
Losing a brother?
My breath hitches, and my mind flies.
Keep going. Use the pain.
It hurts like nothing else.
Shade, right?
Keep his name out of your mouth, I snap, forgetting for a moment what I'm trying to do. The wound is too fresh, too raw. He takes it in stride.
My mother said you used to dream about him, he says.
I flinch at the memory and the thought of her inside my brain. I can still feel her clawing at the walls of my skull.
But I suppose those weren't dreams at all. It was really him.
Did she do that with everyone? I reply. Was nothing safe from her? Even your dreams?
He doesn't respond. I push harder.
Did you ever dream of me?
Again, I cut him without realizing it. He drops his gaze, looking down to the empty plate in front of him. He raises a hand to grab at his water glass, but thinks better of it. His fingers tremble for a second before he shoves them away, out of sight.
I wouldn't know, he finally says. I don't dream.
I scoff.
That's impossible, even for a person like you.
Something dark, something sad, twitches across his face. His jaw tightens and his throat bobs, trying to swallow words he shouldn't speak. They burst from him anyway. His hands reappear, tapping weakly on the table.
I used to have nightmares. She took that part away when I was a boy. Like Samson said, my mother was a surgeon with mines. She cut out whatever didn't suit.
In recent weeks, a ferocious, fiery anger has replaced the cold hollowness I used to feel. But as Maven speaks, the ice returns. It bleeds through me, a poison, an infection. I don't want to hear what he has to say. His excuses and explanations are nothing to me. He is a monster still, a monster always. And yet, I can't stop myself from listening. Because I could be a monster too, if given the wrong chance, if someone broke me like he is broken.
My brother, my father. I know I loved them once. I remember it.
His hands clench around a butter knife, and he glares at the dull edge. I wonder if he wants to use it on himself or his dead mother.
But I don't feel it. That love isn't there anymore. For any of them. For most things.
Then why keep me here, if you don't feel anything? Why not just kill me and be done with this?
She has a hard time erasing certain kinds of feeling, he admits, meeting my eye. She tried to do it with Father, to make him forget his love for Corianne. It only made things worse. Besides, he mumbles. She always said it was better to be heartbroken. The pain makes you stronger. Love makes you weak. And she's right. I learned that before I even knew you. Another name lingers in the air, unspoken. Thomas. A boy at the war front. Another red lost to a useless war. My first real friend, Maven told me once. I realize now the spaces between those words. The things unsaid. He loved that boy as he claims to love me. Thomas, Maven echoes. His grip on the knife tightens. I felt... Then his brow furrows, deep creases forming between his eyes. He puts his other hand to his temple, massaging an ache I can't understand. She wasn't there. She never met him. She didn't know. He wasn't even a soldier. It was an accident. You said you tried to save him, that your guards stopped you? An explosion at headquarters. The report said it was Lakelander infiltration. Somewhere, a clock ticks as the minutes slide by. His silence stretches as he decides what to say, how far to let the mask slip, but it's already gone. He's bare as he can only be with me. We were alone. I lost control. I see it in my mind's eye, filling in what he can't will himself to tell me. An ammunitions depot, maybe? Or even a gas line? Both need only flame to kill. I didn't burn. He did. Maven, even my mother could not cut that memory away. Even she couldn't make me forget, no matter how I begged her to. I wanted her to take that pain from me, and she tried so many times. Instead, it always got worse. I know how he's going to answer my question, but I ask all the same. Please let me go. I won't. Then you're going to let me die too. Like him. The room crackles with heat, sending sweat down my spine. He stands so quickly, he knocks back his chair, letting it crash to the floor. One fist collides with the tabletop before raking sideways, throwing plates, glasses, and reports to the floor. The papers float for a moment, suspended in air before drifting down to the shattered pile of crystal and porcelain. I won't, he growls under his breath, so low I almost don't hear him as he stalks from the room. The Arvins enter and seize me beneath my arms, pulling me away from the table of papers, all of them slipping from reach. I'm surprised to learn that Maven's usually meticulous schedule of hearings and court gatherings is suspended for the rest of the day. I guess our conversation had a stronger effect than I expected. His absence confines me to my room, to Julian's books. I force myself to read, if only to block out any memories of the morning. Maven is a talented liar, and I don't trust a single word he speaks, even if he was telling the truth. Even if he is a product of his mother's meddling, a thorned flower forced to grow a certain way. That doesn't change things. I can't forget everything he's done to me and so many others. When I first met him, I was seduced by his pain. He was the boy in shadow, a forgotten son. I saw myself in him, second always to Gisa, the bright star in my parents' world. I know now that was by design. He caught me back then, ensnaring me in a prince's trap. Now I'm in a king's cage. But so is he. My chains are silent stone. His is the crown. The country of Norta was forged from smaller kingdoms and lordships, ranging in size from the Samos kingdom of the Rift to the city-state Delphi. Caesar Calor, a silver lord of Archaon and a talented tacitician, united fractured Norta against the looming threat of joint invasion by Piedmont and the Lakelands. Once he crowned himself king, he married his daughter Juliana to Garion Savannah, the ruling High Prince of Piedmont. This act cemented a lasting alliance between House Calor and the princes of Piedmont. Many children of Calor and Piedmont royalty upheld the marriage alliance for the following centuries. King Caesar brought an age of prosperity to Norta, and as such, Norton calendars consider the beginning of his reign the demarcation of the New Era, or N.E. It takes me 3 tries to get through the paragraph. Julian's histories are much denser than what I had to learn in school. My thoughts keep drifting. black hair, blue eyes, tears Maven refuses to show, even to me. Is it another performance? What do I do if it is? What do I do if it isn't? My heart breaks for him. My heart hardens against him. I push on to avoid such thoughts. In contrast, relations between newly founded Norta and the extensive Lakelands deteriorated. Following a series of border wars with Prairie in the 2nd century NE, the Lakelands lost vital agricultural territory in the Minoan region, as well as control of the Great River, also known as the Miss. Taxation following the war, as well as the threat of famine and Red Rebellion, forced expansion along the Norton border. Skirmishes sparked on either side. To prevent further bloodshed, King Tiberius III of Norta and King Onikad Signet of the Lakelands met in a historic summit at the crossing of Maiden Falls. Negotiations fell apart quickly, and in 200 NE, both kingdoms declared war, each blaming the other for the breakdown in their diplomatic relations. I can't help but laugh. Nothing ever changes. Known as the Lakelander War in Norta and the aggression in the Lakelands, the conflict is still ongoing at the time of writing. Total silver death tolls number approximately 500,000, most in the first decade of war. Accurate records for red soldiers are not kept, but estimates put the death toll in excess of 50 million, with casualties more than twice that number. Both Lakelander and Norton casualties are equal in proportion to their native red populations. It takes longer than I care to admit, but I scratch out the math in my head. Almost 100 times more. If this book belonged to anyone other than Julian, I would throw it away in rage. A century of war and wasteful bloodshed. How can anyone change something like that? For once, I find myself counting on Maven's ability to twist and scheme. Perhaps he can see a way, forge a path, that no one before him has imagined. 13. Mare. A week passes until I leave my room again. Even though they're a gift from Maven, a reminder of his strange obsession with me, I'm glad for Julian's books. They're my only company. A piece of a friend in this place. I keep them close, alongside Geese's silk scrap. Pages pass with the days. I work back through the histories, traveling through words that become less and less believable. 300 years of Kalor kings, centuries of silver warlords. This is a world I recognize. But the farther I go, the murkier things become. Written records of the so-called Reformation period are scarce, though most scholars agree that the period began sometime around 1500, Old Era, or OE, by the modern Norton calendar. Most records dating before the Reformation, immediately following, during, or prior to the calamities that befell the continent, were almost entirely destroyed, were lost, or are impossible to read at present. Those recovered are closely studied and guarded within the Royal Archives in Delphi, as well as similar facilities in neighboring kingdoms. The calamities themselves have been studied at length, using field investigation paired with pre-Silverian myth to postulate events. At the time of writing, many believe that a combination of ultimate human war, geologic shift, climate change, and other natural catastrophes resulted in the near extinction of the human race. The earliest discovered translatable records date from approximately 950 OE, but the exact year cannot be verified. One document, The Trial of Bar Rambler, is an incomplete account of the attempted court trial of an accused thief in reconstructed Delphi. Bar was accused of stealing his neighbor's wagon. During the course of the trial, Bar repeatedly broke his chains of binding, as if made of twigs, and escaped despite a full guard. It is believed to be the first record of a silver displaying his ability. To this day, House Rombos claims to trace its strong-arm bloodline from him. However, this claim is refuted by another court record, the trial of Hillman, Triant, Davids, wherein three men of Delphi were tried for the subsequent murder of Bar Rambler, who was reported to have no children. The three men were acquitted and later praised by the citizens of Delphi for their work in destroying the Rambler abomination,
Delphi Records and Writings, Volume 1. The treatment at Bar Rambler was not an isolated incident. Many early writings and documents detail fear and persecution of a rising population of abilityed humans with silver-colored blood. Most banded together for protection, forming communities outside red-dominated cities. The Reformation period ended with the rise of silver societies, some living in conjunction with red cities, though most eventually overtook their red-blooded counterparts. Silvers persecuted by reds. I want to laugh at the thought. How stupid. How impossible. I've lived every day of my life knowing they are gods and we are insects. I cannot begin to fathom a world where the reverse was true. These are Julian's books. He saw enough merit here to study them. Still, I feel too unsettled to continue, and I keep my reading to later years. The New Era, the Kalor Kings. Names and places I know in a civilization I understand. One day my delivered clothes are plainer than ever. Comfortable, made for utility rather than style. My first indication of something amiss. I almost look like a security officer, with stretchy pants, a black jacket sparsely embellished with pinprick whorls of ruby beading, and shockingly sensible boots. Polished but worn leather, no heel, just the right amount of pinch, and enough room for my ankle manacles. The ones at the wrist are hidden, as usual, covered by gloves, fur-lined, for the cold. My heart leaps. I've never been so excited about gloves. Am I going outside? I ask Kitten breathlessly, forgetting how good she is at ignoring me. She doesn't disappoint, staring straight ahead as she leads me from my luxurious cell. Clover is always easier to read. The twitch of her lips and narrowed green eyes are affirmation enough. Not to mention that they, too, are both wearing thick coats as well as gloves, albeit the rubber ones to protect their hands from electricity I no longer possess. Outside. I haven't tasted much more than a breeze from an open window since that day on the steps of the palace. I thought Maven was going to take my head off, so obviously my mind was elsewhere. Now I wish I could remember the cold air of November, the sharp wind bringing winter with it. In my haste, I almost outpace the Arvins. They're quick to yank me in line and make me match their steps. It's a maddening descent, down stairs and corridors I know by heart. Familiar pressure ripples against me, and I glance over my shoulder. Egg and Trio join our ranks, bringing up the rear of my Arvin guard. They move in unison with Kitten and Clover, steps matching, as we make our way to the entrance hall in Caesar's Square. Quick as my excitement came, it bleeds away. Fear gnaws at my insides. I try to manipulate Maven into making costly mistakes, to make him doubt, to burn the last bridges he has left. But maybe I failed. Maybe he's going to burn me instead. I focus on the click of my boots on marble. Something solid to anchor my fear. My fists curl in my gloves, begging for a spark to tide me over. It never comes. The palace seems strangely empty, even more so than usual. Doors are shut fast, while servants flutter through the rooms that aren't closed yet, quick and quiet as mice. They flutter white sheets over furniture and artwork, covering them up in strange shrouds. Few guards, fewer nobles. The ones I pass are young and wide-eyed. I know their houses, their colors, and I can see naked fear on their faces. All are dressed like me, for the cold, for function, for movement. Where's everyone going? I ask no one, because no one is going to answer. Clover harshly yanks on my ponytail, forcing me to look straight ahead. It doesn't hurt, but the action is jarring. She never handles me this way, not unless I give her a good reason. I spin through the possibilities. Is this an evacuation? Has the Scarlet Guard attempted another assault on Archaon? Or have the rebelling houses returned to finish what they started? No, it can't be either. This is too calm. We're not running from anything. As we cross the hall, I take a deep breath, looking around. Marble beneath me, chandeliers above me, tall glimmering mirrors and gilded paintings of Kalor ancestors marching up the walls on either side.
red and black banners, silver and gold and crystal,